Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl, and today I am really happy to have with me one of the founders of Basecamp, Mr. Jason Fried. How's it going, Jason?
Good. Hey, good to see you. Or good to hear from you, I should say. I can't see you right now.
No. Well, you know, we could have done that, but honestly, we're still on Skype, and I don't even know what's up with that.
That works for me.
Still doing this. Yeah. So the last time we saw each other, I think, was Owner Camp in Montreal.
That's right.
And actually, I think that's the only time we've seen each other.
And that might be true.
And it was great getting to know you a little bit. I'll tell you, on the show today, and I have had one of those days where I overcommitted. You know, I just did it. So it's like one of those things where I was just like, this is a perfect day to talk to Jason, because I want to understand, you know, I've read a lot of what you've done. I've watched some of the talks that you've given, and you're really so tuned in on focus and on understanding that those chunks of dedicated time will get more done than three times as much time interrupted. Was this the way you've always been? Is this how you showed up in life?
I don't think so. I don't know really, but I don't think so. I probably had some situations. I mean, I know I can recall some of them. I don't know how far it goes back, but where I'd spend a week, I just like look back on Friday and I go, man, I was really busy this week, but I got nothing done.
Right.
And I'm not talking about like checking off to do's or like any, it's not, I don't really track my work that way. So it's not about that. It's about a feeling of fulfillment and satisfaction in how I spent my time during that week. So it's not like I got 30% more done or 40%. I don't really look at things that way. So, but I remember feeling this way a few times. And I know a lot of people feel this way. They're busy. Everyone's busy. You ask them how people, you know, how you doing? Like, oh, I'm so busy. Everyone's
so busy
all the time, right? And how is it at work? Oh, it's crazy at work. Like, everyone's crazy and busy. Yet I'm finding that very few of us are able to look back on the end, at the end of the day on Friday and go, oh, I was fulfilled this week, or I had a full week where I accomplished a lot and made a lot of progress. The more I ran into that myself, I just said, this doesn't make any sense. And then you just look at your day and you start to figure it out. When you look closely at it, like, what am I doing that's so busy? Well, I'm context shifting a lot. I'm jumping between things. I have gaps of time that I try and fill in with real work. And then the rest of the time I'm spending on stuff that I really don't want to be doing, like meetings or whatever it might be. And you just do a little bit of analysis and have a little bit of self-awareness about your day. And pretty quickly you realize that if you don't get on top of that, and you don't control your own schedule and you don't control your own time, then you can't control what you get done. And I just had enough. And I don't remember when this happened. It wasn't this like immediate epiphany.
Right.
But I do remember earlier in my career feeling that way. And I haven't for a long, long time, because I haven't been working that way anymore. But so it wasn't natural, but I guess maybe I was more attuned to it and go, I guess what I did was I said, this is wrong. This doesn't work. I think a lot of people put up with it and they just sort of assume this is the way it is, but it doesn't have to be that way. It certainly doesn't have to be that way. And maybe that's what was different about me, perhaps.
Well, and I can only imagine. So I started a web shop, 37 Signals, I think, started a few years before Engine did. And, you know, we were reading a lot of the Signal Noise stuff and trying to figure out how we could be better with what we were doing. We loved that idea of passive communication. We were all in the same office, but we tried, you know, your headphones were your door kind of a thing. And one of the things that I remember, and this was a boss that I had before we started Engine, she came over to me and she said, you look really crazy busy. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I can't figure it out. And she goes, why don't you go home?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what? She goes, yeah, it's really not going to make a difference. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, yeah, people will call and we'll just say that you went home and tomorrow you can start over. And seriously, nobody's going to notice. It's right. Not a deal. And she gave me a gift that day, you know? And like, even today, at one point I just went, I'm going to go for a walk. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to get out of here. And I'm in Florida, you're in Chicago. So you might not be able to go for a walk today, but it's one of those things that I just think makes such a difference. And you know, you had given that TED talk on how we can't work at work, and how I think you said there's something about that front door at work that's like a Cuisinart to time, right?
Right.
That you just have these moments of time. You don't have these blocks of time anymore. And I'm sure I'm butchering the quote, but it was like one of those things that also resonated with me. And so I'm curious, in your days now, like what does it look like? What does Jason Fried do when he gets up in the morning, and how does your day work?
So, my day's a little bit different every day. I go in the flow basically. So I for example, lately we're writing a new book right now. And so I'm just kind of getting in the swing of things with writing. And writing to me is not an eight hour a day endeavor. I can't sit and write for 8 hours a day. I can write for, you know, an hour and then I'll take a break and I'll do something else. I'll go for a walk or whatever I'll do something, whatever. And then I'll get back into it and work for a little bit longer and break. And I just kind of go with how I feel. But the key is that, and this is the key for everybody who works at Basecamp, is that nobody owns your schedule. You own your schedule. So your roughly eight hours a day that you work, they're all yours. And that gives you the flexibility to say, well, if I put in an hour here and take a little bit of a break, I can jump back in when I'm ready. Not like I can jump back in at 4 because I've got something from 11 to 12 and then something from 12 to 1:30 and then something from 2 to 3:15. Like, you can jump back in and back out of your work as often as you want because your schedule is entirely open just for you. And so I think that's really fundamentally the way I work, which is that my days are open and I kind of decide how I'm feeling about what I need to do. There's other things I have to do sometimes, but there are very few things that are sort of pre-scheduled. So I kind of go with the flow and my workday changes. So for example, we work in these 6 week cycles where every 6 weeks we start a new set of projects. And so at the beginning of that cycle, I'm spending a lot of time with the teams working through the ideas and helping, you know, people sort of form them and shape them. And then I kind of go away and everyone does the work and I focus on other things. So my work is based on sort of where we're at in our sort of cycle of work, what I have to do separately. It's kind of all over the place, but I get up around the same time. We have like a 2-year-old now, so I'm getting up at like 6 because that's when he gets up, you know? But I bounce in and out of work all day long. So I am not a all in work, straight 8 hour kind of person. But the difference is that when I bounce out, it's my choice to bounce out versus being forced to bounce out. And that way, if I am working on something really deep and I am just in it for 2 or 3 hours, I have all that time to myself without ever having any fear that anybody's going to pull me away from that work. So right. Then when I'm ready to bounce out, I can do it myself. And that to me is the secret. It's funny, we just did a workshop recently and I was showing people I also put this post up on our blog about, like, I shared my calendar with everybody and it's pretty much empty. There's like nothing on it. And people couldn't believe that. But what was interesting was what I learned at this workshop that we gave, and this is my own sort of naivete and ignorance basically, but in corporate America, nobody owns their own calendar. Everyone's calendars are visible to everybody else. Everyone has shared calendars and you can basically request time from other people's calendars and then sends them an invite, right? And then, like, basically you almost always say yes. Very few people say no. And so we're all able to pick away at each other's time all day long. And to me, that is completely insane. Like, I can't even imagine working in a situation like that, yet that's how most people work. At Basecamp, no one can see anybody's calendar and nobody can demand any time from anybody else. You have to give your time versus allowing someone else to take your time. And so that's a very fundamentally different way of working.
So I'm curious, have you had people use Calendly with you?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what it is about that. And I apologize to anybody I know that works there or knows them. I'm sure they're very nice people. That app is one of the rudest things to me because it has this, okay, I'm busy. You come here and find a time where I'll be able to meet with you later kind of a feel.
Yep.
And then there's another one called MixMax where you actually, when you email somebody, you can say, hey, these are some times I have available. So they just click it, which feels a lot more comfortable, but it's the same thing. I think it's what you're saying with Calendly. It feels like I have to say yes and give up some of my time. Whereas with MixMax, it's almost like I'm saying, hey, you know what? Here's some times I have, and I'll give them to you.
Right. Oh, I see. Yeah. It's a different way of looking at that. I just think that time, you know, if people thought of time, here's the thing, like, businesses love to protect things. They protect intellectual property. Like, they have lawyers and trademarks and copyrights, and they're very aggressive about that. They protect their money. People have budgets, and they have CFOs, and there's limits on spending and all these things, right? They're very good at protecting secrets, and there's, you know, NDAs and whatnot and stuff. Yet, like, they don't protect their employees' time. They think they spend and allow people to take time as if it's free and unlimited. And in fact, it is the most limited thing that we all have. And even more limited than time is attention, which is a subset of time. It's as if we can all just dip into each other's bank accounts and start pulling money out of each other's accounts. And, like, no one would think that would be normal anywhere. But that's how time works at most companies. And that, to me, is a recipe for basically what we've been talking about, which is feeling busy all the time,
yeah,
but not actually feeling like you're making any progress.
I saw John Lennon. He was being interviewed by Dick Cavett. So this obviously was in the 70s.
Yeah.
And Dick Cavett asked John Lennon how much time he spent reading critics' reviews of things that he did and stuff like that. And he said he generally didn't. Like, sometimes stuff would come across his desk or whatever, but he didn't really pay much attention to it. And Dick Cavett asked him why. And Lennon said, you know, when I'm deciding what I'm going to do every day, I kind of ask myself, will this matter when I'm dead? And if whatever it is doesn't matter, if it's not going to make any kind of a change in the world when I'm gone, then I generally, I just don't do it, you know?
That's a guy who had some pretty good priorities probably with his time.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, like, I'm sure there were days he had to sit in a meeting with the record label and like,
oh, yeah,
you know, talk about a cover or something. Like, sometimes you have to do some of those things. But of course, like, that's a given. That's just life at some level. But then the rest of the time, you've really got to protect.
Yeah.
You've really, really, really got to protect it. Like it's a limited resource, and it is a limited resource. So that's how I work, is I protect my time, and that's how everybody, like, that's how we're set up at our companies, to protect everybody's time, and look for the things that take people's time away and get rid of those things. So,
right,
you know, turning everything into real-time conversations that don't need to be real-time, that's very distracting. Office environments where everyone's talking out loud and there's a lot of distraction, physical distraction, we eliminate that kind of stuff. You know, we don't have meetings at our company. We don't have any scheduled meetings. Like, there's just, we kind of cut those things out, and then people have basically their whole day to themselves to work with their team or themselves or however they want, and they coordinate that themselves, but they're in control of it.
So when you're working with everyone, everything's just completely passive?
No, not completely.
Okay.
But mostly. So, the way we work is, in Basecamp 3, you can chat, you can instant message, and you can also post messages and post comments on anything. Right.
Right.
And, basically the way we think about it is this, you use chat for things that don't matter, basically meaning that if someone else doesn't see it, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like your thing you just said, like, if you go home, no, it's not going to matter,
mm-hmm,
kind of day, right? So you might ask a random question in there. You might, you know, ask someone if they know where something is in there, and you don't really care who sees it, and you don't really care who gives you the answer as long as you get something. Like, that's fine for chat. But anything that's important, anything that needs to be discussed or debated, anything that needs to be considered, anything that other people absolutely need to see, you post a message or you post a comment these are basically asynchronous methods of communication.
Right.
Where people are given a notification, but they're not, the expectation is not immediate reply. The expectation is, at some point, I need you to get it back to me, but I need to know that you've seen this. And so we do a lot of conversations. Sometimes they take 2 or 3 days. And some people might go, well, why not just do it right now? It'd take 10 minutes. Well, because if everything, you can say that about everything.
Yeah.
If you say about everything, you're just constantly chatting all day, interrupting each other. No one has any time to do anything else. So unless something is a real crisis or emergency or absolutely needs to be handled right now,
right,
most of those things happen asynchronously. However, one-on-one communication, we do a lot of that in real time. So like instant messaging with Basecamp or whatever. In Basecamp, they're called pings. But that's okay. It's more about, the problem is when you get groups involved. Because when you say one thing and 7 people hear it and are expected to respond immediately, you've just created an enormous splash. And you got a lot of people wet, basically. And did you need to, is the question. So that's kind of how you kind of think about things like that.
Well, and then you've taking that time away from the multiplier. That's what you're saying with the splash, right? So it's like you've pulled people out of their focus, and it may not even impact them. So it's but it's totally taken that away from them.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with the chat style communication there is that whatever tool you use doesn't even matter. What you'll have is you'll have a room name or a channel name in a general sense, might be the name of a project or might be like programmers or whatever it is, right? And there's an unread indicator next to it, and either is a dot or a number. Here's the thing. That tells you nothing, okay? Because if it says 23 next to some room or channel, right?
Right.
What does that mean? It means there's 23 lines that you haven't seen. It doesn't mean these are important. It doesn't mean you need to read them. What it basically means is, hey, you, stop what you're doing. Read everything that you missed to find out if anything was worth reading at all. That is bankrupt, in my opinion. This fact that, like, you don't even know if it's worth seeing, and the only way to find out is to read it all to decide if it was worth reading at all.
Right.
That and then if you think about, if you say one thing and seven people, their notification counters go up, and there's no context around the conversation, you really are creating big splashes and getting people wet all day long, and people are talking more and more and more, and there's this feeling that the more you communicate, the better you're collaborating. I don't believe that to be true either. I think there's an epidemic of over-communication and over-collaboration and everything being escalated to right now that's causing people a lot of anxiety and problems. So I think that this is at the root of a lot of the things we're dealing with right now.
So this is interesting. I'm curious, with you saying that, what's your take on the concept of agile teams where the teams are all working together? Is that collaboration too much, or does it depend on the way that they execute?
I think it depends on a few things. The size of a team, I think, is important. Small, like, for example, our teams are never really bigger than three, no matter what we're working on. We try and break the problem down to a size that three people can handle it, or two. And the reason that's important, we found, is that three people or two people, it's very easy to communicate with two or three people. There's not a lot of sort of wasted communication. There's not a lot of additional management required. There's not a lot of like rehashing and going over things with people who weren't there. You know, sometimes if you're on a team of six or seven, only four are available. So four do something, and you have to rehash it for the other three that weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, so I think team size is a big factor here. And when you keep teams really small, then they can work pretty tightly together. Everyone's pretty much on the same page automatically. Like, you don't really have to do much to keep people on the same page when there's only two or three people working together. It's only when the teams get bigger, or when you're cross departments and you've got a lot of different people interfacing about something, where everything just gets really hard.
Right.
And then people feel like there needs to be like a lot more communication, but that causes its own problems and its own waves and ripples. And so I think keeping the teams as small as you possibly can, and the discipline then is to break down the work into sort of nuggets that can be attacked by teams of two or three, mm-hmm. versus trying to take on big hairy problems and go, oh my God, this is so big, we need 12 people to do it. You go, no, there's actually maybe five or six separate projects here. If we break them down into small pieces that we can do incrementally, one at a time, and make progress one at a time with teams of three, or maybe have two teams of three working on two things at once, but not like 12 people trying to work on 12 things at once. That's kind of the...
Definitely. And I think it's easier for us mentally to grasp those few things than the monster, right?
Yeah.
It's Mark Hurst, the first to-do app I ever used was Good To Do, which was Goo To Do at the time because you couldn't afford the URL Good To Do.
I remember that, yeah.
And you know, I loved it because I was email-based and I could forward things to the future based on days, and I could make sure I only had so many things during the day. Now I have a to-don't list. Every morning I get up and I say, these are the dangers of the day for me. I need to make sure I don't do these things. And it seems to free me up.
Let me actually share one other quick thing about that.
Sure.
Which is cool. when I tell people this, they're often surprised by it. Maybe so it's a good thing to share, is that, if I don't get something done the previous day, it does not automatically become something I look at the next day. I always start my days with nothing to do, basically.
Yeah.
And rather than continue to roll things over, if you keep rolling things over, you're basically always behind.
Right.
And you're always like trying to climb this hill that you created for yourself previously, and then you don't, rarely do you reconsider those things because you're like, well, I just didn't get it done, so I need to do it. So I tend to basically start my days fresh. And if something was really important, like I'll just know I have to do it anyway, and it'll kind of come back into my frame of reference and frame of view for the day. But I don't roll things over. And so I think when you wake up in the morning, and if you already have like this daunting list of things you didn't do yesterday, you're naturally going to feel frazzled and behind. And that's kind of a bad way to start the day. So that's a little, I mean, it's not really a trick. It's just like,
no.
I kind of ignore stuff that I didn't finish. I think I have to get it done.
I think that's great. And also I've had in my own experience where if I delayed something three or four times, I just tried to remove it, or I wasn't ready to work on it yet. There was something I had to figure out. But I think it, a great example in the physical world of what you just described, again, at this agency I worked at, my boss one day came back from vacation. She had been gone for 2 weeks and her inbox was ridiculous, right?
Uh-huh.
Just all this stuff. And she picked it up and just put it in the trash. And I said, what was that? And she goes, the important stuff will come back. She's like, it always does.
Totally true.
I tell people, it's like when you go on vacation, either turn off your email server or just, you know, automatically have everything go into a folder to delete, because you're not going to go through those 500 emails and do anything of value.
Nope.
You know?
Just last week I did that. I mean, I do this every once in a while where I just basically declare email bankruptcy. And
yes.
I just archive everything. And look, yeah, in some ways it's irresponsible because I, there's probably things in there I needed to do, but I wasn't going to do them anyway, clearly. Otherwise, I would have.
Right.
And at some point, I am putting some of the burden on someone else to get back to me on something I owe them. And I recognize that that's imperfect and unfair at some level. But you also just have to at some point recognize that it's not better the other way either, which is lying to yourself that you're going to ever get back to that
queue
from 4 weeks ago that you didn't finish, and now you've got 120 things in your inbox. Like, you're not going to do it anyway. So just like, don't make yourself feel better. Like, actually, the way to make yourself feel better is to be honest about it and to go back to zero and reset. That's the best way I've found to deal with something like that.
I totally agree. Now, we're running out of time for the show, but I did want to ask you. So you say you've got a 2-year-old now.
Yeah.
And I know you've said in the past that you don't – or I think you might have put this in a Medium post – that you don't really have goals. You don't think that way. So I'm just curious – do you ever have like a vision of where you want to end up? Or, you know, I mean, you've got a family now and things are moving forward. I'm just curious, how do you see the future?
It's weird. I don't think that way really. I mean, I want my kid to be happy and healthy and do whatever he wants to do. And all, you know, all the stuff parents want for their kids. So I want all of that, but I just don't really think too much about it. Mostly because there's very little I can really control. Like, the future it's unknown, it's vast, and like, it's hard to control things that are unknown and vast. just like generally in any world. So what I can basically do is I can control today and how I'm feeling and my expectations and my responses to things I have to deal with. And maybe I can think about a few days out and, you know, I have a declining sense of specificity or accuracy about anything beyond a few days or a few weeks anyway, just because I don't find that it's worth putting that much energy into that. I'd rather put the energy in today into like the next few days. I mean, I have like business wise, I want to stay in business. Like, that's what I want. I want to stay in business and then continue to enjoy what I do. Work with great people, do things our way. Like, that could take a million different forms. So it's more about like, maybe I should say the principles that matter to me more so than the specifics of how something might look one day. Like, I didn't know really quickly, like when I first started this software stuff, I was in high school, I think. I made this music organizer for myself. I put this up on AOL and some people downloaded it and paid me $20 for it. And I go, oh my God, I can make money making this stuff that I like. And that turned into me getting into graphic design, which turned into me going to school and doing some stuff on the side. And then I started doing some website design in college because the internet just started hitting. And then I took a job with a guy in San Diego and worked there for a while. I quit after 4 months, realizing I don't like to work for other people. So I moved back to Chicago and started working on my own, doing freelance work. I picked up some contracts. I picked up some stuff. I realized I didn't want to work just on my own, so I hired somebody. Like, everything's just sort of a layer. Everything just kind of layers up.
Yeah.
I feel like today, Basecamp, the company I'm running with 50 people and 120,000 paying companies who pay for Basecamp and this thing, is the same exact company that I started when I was 16 selling music software to 50 people on AOL for $20 a pop. Like, it's just one long continuum. It's not a series of changes. And that's just kind of how I look at things. So everything just leads to something else. And as long, all I can control is kind of how I'm feeling about those things and my expectations of those things. And things just sort of unfold and you deal. That's kind of how I've always been. I don't know if it's the right way to be. It's just how it works for me.
Jason, I just have to say thank you for that. Because seriously, that feels so much better than trying to set goals with metrics and all of this type of stuff and feel like you got closer or you didn't. Instead, just looking at it saying, you know, where am I in position to succeed today? And let's move forward towards that. And at the end say, did I move closer to a state that I really, really like? You know, that just feels so much better to me. So.
Yeah. Well, sure. Can I actually add one more quick thing about that too? This is an interesting little anecdote. So we're working on this new book, and one of the things where this book's called The Calm Company, and it's all about how to be calm and we're pushing really hard against it's crazy at work and busyness and business, right? And we're writing this series of initial chapters called Diagnosis, which is like all the things that crazy companies do. right? And one of them is they have this thing, which we actually almost mistakenly got into, which is like, I think it's called BHAGs, Big Hairy Audacious Goals.
Oh man, I set one this year. I set them this year.
Right. So I so like a lot of people set these big, hairy, audacious goals. And we'd done this too about a year ago. And I actually think this is maybe one of the worst things you can do. This is like my current opinion. Because you set up, basically it's artificial. Let's just face it. Like the goal is essentially artificial. Like you make it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I want to, by the end of the year or whatever, we should have, I'm making this up now, we should have, you know, 25, say we have 10 clients, we want to have 20 clients by the end of the year. We want to do 5 million this year instead of 3 million last year. Like, you just set these goalposts that are totally arbitrary, and then you bust your ass to get there. You don't know if it's actually going to make you happy, but what it does is it stresses the hell out of you if you don't get there and if you're not getting there. Because, and it's like, why do we do this to ourselves? Like, what's the point of this? And we had set one a few years ago, or last year actually, I think it was. And halfway through, we're like, why did we even set this? Like, what was thinking? And then you're like, well, you're supposed to, I guess, right? I mean, you're supposed to. And like, well, who said that? And so anyway, we're pushing hard against goals, basically, like big, hairy, audacious goals. It's okay to have like we want to get this project done in 4 weeks. Like, that's fine. That's reasonable.
Right.
But like, these big hairy numbers or growth targets or whatever, they're all fake.
Yeah.
They're all fake. Unless there's like some true absolute requirement for you to really hit those things for whatever reason. Like if you have a bank loan and you need to, you know, whatever, or it's going to be recalled. Like, I get that. That's a different story. But most of these things are fake. And to work your ass off towards something fake, just that's a recipe for crazy. And so anyway – yeah.
No, I think that's great. And although I speaking of crazy, I think Tim Ferriss is a bit crazy. But I will say that the one thing about Tim Ferriss to me was just this concept that why are you wasting all this time now for something in the future when you can just have the time now?
It deferred living.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing I take away from him the most, which is this notion of deferred living is crazy because who knows, man, you might be dead in a year. Like,
exactly.
Who knows, right? Who knows anything? And so, yeah, I'm all on board with that thinking for sure.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Bureau Briefing today. Jason, this was awesome. And seriously, it was something I needed today. So you've kind of woken me up inside to realize I was starting to fall into the artificial trappings of trying to be successful. So thank you for breaking me out of that.
You bet, Carl. It's always fun to break people out of that, because I have to do it myself from time to time also. So we all fall into the trap.
Well, everybody listening, thank you so much, and we'll be back next week. Until then, be good. And hey, don't worry about the BHAGs. Just have a good day.